Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you happen to see the op-ed in Monday's New York Times, "Don't Tax the Rich, Tax Inequality Itself," by economist Ian Ayers of Harvard and Aaron Edlin of UC Berkeley? They look at the widening inequality in the U.S. and suggest that Congress enact a tax on upper income that would automatically kick in when the top 1% earns 36 times more than the median household income. I'm joined now by the two authors to talk more about how this would work and why they think we need it. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
And just to reemphasize your op-ed's title, and to be clear about what you're proposing, because it's kind of novel, your aim isn't to raise taxes just because someone's making a lot of money, only if while they're making a lot of money, middle-class wages are stagnant. Ian Ayers, can you explain?
Sure. So we looked at the distribution of wealth over time, and of course, rich people make have higher incomes than the median household, but in 1980, the richest 1% averaged 12 times the median household income, but by 2006, that had skyrocketed to 36 times the income of the median household, and we think enough is enough, and that it is appropriate to have a new kind of a tax that is contingent on inequality, and so that if inequality got worse than where we are now, 1%ers would be subject to a new marginal tax.
So, Aaron Edlin, how would it work exactly?
Well, the IRS would, it would be very simple to do. The IRS would simply set a marginal tax rate high enough so that the previous year, if that tax rate had been in place, the after-tax income of 1%ers on average would have been at most 36 times the median after-tax income. And if the IRS did that every year, then we would essentially put the brakes on inequality.
So how would that apply in today's economy? How much would taxes rise on who exactly, and how much more would it generate for the national fisc?
Well, probably in today's economy, the tax wouldn't kick in because since we've gone into a recession since 2006, we're probably below the 36 trigger. So this really is a proposal that is prospective in nature.
Wait, you mean things would have to be even more unequal than they are today, even with the spread in inequality that has taken place over the last few decades? Things would have to be more unequal than they are today for this to kick in?
It's putting the brakes on it. That's right. Now we could have a debate. And matter of fact, one of the larger goals of the piece is trying to start a debate. Should we go back to the simpler time when the rich just earned 12 times as much as the median, and we might have a Kyoto-like proposal that by 2020 that we would start actually reducing inequality. But for right now, it's a fairly aggressive proposal even now to try to make it politically feasible to at least have a conversation. What would Republican candidates say about taxing inequality? Would they be? We think that Reagan would actually be horrified to learn that 1%ers were averaging 36 times, that it would be bad for America if it went to 40 or 50.
Jim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I very much believe in progressive taxation, but that's not the real way to deal with this growing inequality in America. The reason you have this growing inequality is because the relationship between capital and labor has shifted so heavily toward capital that working people can't get ahead. You need policies to shift some power back to working people in their relationship with capital. That's the only way you can really deal with inequality long term. These tax policies come and go from year to year, Congress to Congress. You have to deal with the underlying problems of the economy and the power of capital over labor. So I'll take you my response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Aaron Edlin at UC Berkeley, to Jim's point, what would this actually do for middle-class Americans or working-class Americans whose wages are stagnating? Yes, it would put a little more money from the wealthy into the federal government, but would it do anything to address the roots of inequality that are actually keeping wages down for everybody else? Oh, Ian Ayers, go ahead and you take that.
Sure. Well, it would, on its face, the proposal is just trying to make progress, make sure we don't have worse inequality. I do think that there has been structural changes, let's say, in the bargaining power of workers, but there are many other structural changes that are going on. The rise of the internet and hedge fund are not centrally about capital versus labor power, but we have seen tectonic changes in the ability of people with intellectual property, people on the internet. What's cool is $1 billion is a phrase that we just didn't have in our vocabulary 20 years ago, and in fact we can't quite know where technology is leading us toward the natural concentration of wealth. But it is appropriate for government to take action so that we don't live in a world with massively unequal income distributions.
Mike in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Where in the Constitution does it say that government's role is to grant this equality that your guests think is so righteous? Give us the freedom to make our own way. It's punishment, and it's silly. Why not have a tax for anybody who has a slightly different level of achievement in some other area? It's absurd.
Mike, let me ask you a question. If the market is working in such a way that 1% or 5% or 10% of the people are getting extremely wealthy and wages are stagnating or declining for everybody else, I'm taking an extreme scenario here. Let's say they're going way up, or maybe it's not that extreme. Maybe this is actually what's happening. If things are going way up for a few percent in the marketplace and down or long-term stagnating for everybody else, is that a condition that you just throw up your hands about and say, well, that's the way things work. Don't punish success.
Well, in our manner of government, we would have to then have an amendment to the Constitution to say that we have now discovered a new role for the government, and that is to attack success and somehow get us this euphoric equality.
All right. Aaron Edlin, want to take on Mike's question?
Well, we could go and look at the amendment to the Constitution that authorizes the income tax and argue about that. But I think the more central point that the caller makes is a question of fairness, which is, he's asking, well, how can it be fair to take money from people who have justly earned it? And my answer is twofold. First of all, it's traditional. We've come to expect that people pay income taxes and that people in higher brackets pay more, and in fact, in the past, in the 70s or the 1940s, rates were astronomically high for the high income earners relative to today, as high as 90% or 92%. But the central question of fairness, I think, can be understood in this way, which is we all owe a debt to society and to government, and there's no way absent government that Bill Gates could have made the money he made. So it's not as if he earned it alone. Most of it is due to the wonderful order that the government gives us. And the question of how much we owe back to society for that
is something one can argue about, but I think it's pretty clear that we owe a lot back to society.
We're just about out of time.
For what we earn.
You've put your idea on the table. Set tax rates based on not simply how much people are earning, but how much inequality there is in what people are earning. So, Ian, do you think there is any possibility that this would become politically feasible in the United States anytime soon?
Well, maybe. We'd need to have a broad-based movement. That one of the problems is whenever you try to have a structural change, whether it's a campaign finance law or a change in such as this to the tax code, entrenched interests, billionaires have a good reason to lean against it, and you could always be cynical, but I think actually history shows that every 20 or 30 or 40 years in this country, the people get fed up, often in reaction to a crisis, and make structural changes. We saw that after the Watergate era, where we saw the War Powers Amendment coming in and campaign finance reform, and I'm not sure what the future will hold, but the Occupy Wall Street might be the seeds of some future movement that, combined with the crisis, might bring change.
Ian Ayers of Harvard, Aaron Edlin of UC Berkeley, together they wrote an op-ed in Monday's New York Times, "Don't tax the rich, tax inequality itself." Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, what does it mean if people are giving Kindles for the holidays instead of books themselves? Stay with us.